If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another edition of the Weird Things podcast. My name is Justin Robert Young. Joining me, as always, is Brian Brushwood.
Huzzah! If it sounds like I'm eating a popsicle, it's because I have a rare genetic condition that causes me to sound like I'm eating a Bluebell popsicle from time to time.
And we should all feel pity for your condition and all others that are afflicted.
I'm here to raise awareness for BBPSD, Bluebell popsicle sounding disease. It's a real condition.
That is actually your war cry. It's a real condition.
It's a real condition.
Well, you want to know what? Andrew Mayne, of course, still on assignment in Los Angeles. We will have him on the podcast, hopefully at some point in the next couple weeks. But we are flying solo for now, me and Brian as a tandem, tied together, flying through the podcast atmosphere.
I think flying
we'll
hopefully
solo, be joined by Bonnie.
I think solo is the right idea, too, because the two of us together make up like almost an Andrew. So it's like we're just really one human trying to pilot this plane.
Well, let's get right in to some actual news, some stuff that we would normally kind of talk about, very much in our purview. Brian, have you heard of the Arcad Space Telescope Kickstarter by Planetary Resources?
I have not. Somehow I missed this. This is like an open source thing, or?
So here's the deal. It's going to be the first publicly accessible space telescope that will be able to take amazing photos of space. And they got some pretty interesting, we'll get into the perks in a second and whether or not they kind of blow your skirt up. But Planetary Resources, if you are not familiar or don't remember, is the company that is dedicated to studying asteroids and mining them for the raw materials contained herein. They are obviously moving in steps toward this, and one of the steps is identifying and getting more information on which asteroids are coming in and then developing the technology that would be able to capture them so they can start mining.
So this is, just to be clear, these are the for-profit mining people, the folks who are like it's Google or former Google people and a bunch of moneyed interests that want to go out.
I believe Peter Diamandis might be among the principal people, but we can look that up in a second.
Right. Okay. But so these guys, I mean, they're not like the Mars One gang. I mean, they're like a real legit operation that's committing billions of dollars to this venture.
Certainly so. And they seem to be going in the right direction in terms of being able to take this step by step. Like, this isn't like, you know, hey, let's cast a reality show and that will put them on Mars.
Right. So when you say it's publicly available, that means like any Joe Schmo can just hop up and take some pictures, or they can apply for time on the telescope. Or
so. All right, here's how they describe it: the Arcad is a technologically advanced orbiting space telescope that will be controlled by you, the crowd, through the pledges and community involvement. You can even direct your telescope direct your telescope time to nonprofit science centers and universities for time in your or time in your communities. Just think about the true impact this endeavor would have for a moment. Together, we can provide access to technology that costs tens of millions of dollars into the hands of students, scientists, and a new generation of explorers who will use it in ways we can't fathom yet. So the idea is to just put this thing up there.
It sounds a little bit like they're betting on the whole wisdom of the crowds thing, like basically nutty ideas that maybe a small group of directed, I don't want to say bureaucrats, but people working within a set structure might be able to figure out a way. You might have these crackpots on the side who figure out something to look at, or maybe even like Reddit gets a time and they all upvote whatever to look at next.
Well, and the idea is that you would be able to buy time, and that somebody, they say here that among their missions on why they are doing this is to give a kid with, you know, a kid in fifth grade or somebody writing a graduate thesis access to a space telescope. Now, part of how they are gaining the momentum on Kickstarter, which as of now, with 24 days to go and $1 million goal, they already have $761,000 plus in the bank. But what they're doing is space selfies, Brian.
Oh, my God. Wait, you can take a picture of your own house from space or what?
No, you can upload whatever picture you want. It will be on a screen that is built into the space telescope. There is then another camera outside of the telescope, which will take a picture of your picture
in space,
with Earth in the background.
Okay. This is the kind of thing that on the surface sounds so stupid that I just want to throw the table over and ask what people are doing. But it's simultaneously so genius because this is exactly the thing that's going to raise the money and the awareness. This is what America, this is what planet Earth actually wants to do with their space telescope. And if that's the case, then I don't see why they shouldn't be allowed to.
Which is why I donated $99.
Did you?
Yeah, I got the Help Find Killer Asteroids and Alien Galaxies package, which help protect our planet from hazardous asteroids and better understand the evolution of our solar system. On your behalf, we'll give students and scientists 5 minutes of observation time on the ARCID main optic. Virtually join a research team as a citizen scientist contributor and receive regular updates on their research and findings. You'll also receive your HD space selfie,
yes,
before all lower pledge levels. And as extra appreciations, all pledgers at this level and higher will get an annual membership to the Planetary Society, now, the world's largest space advocacy.
Now, that's awesome. The Planetary Society is legit badass. I mean, not that these guys aren't as well, but that's another good organization that you're now part of. Let me get Bonnie Brushwood just walked in on this. Let me set the stage for you.
Hello.
All right, Bonnie. So massive resources being put forward to launch a space telescope into space. Completely public accessible. People could take photos of whatever you want. As you walked in, we found out that the number one way to launch it for publicity is take a picture of you in space.
Why not? That's awesome.
All right. Case closed. Well, Bonnie says it's awesome.
No, I think what people are buying into is the access, is that, you know, public access to these to this, you know,
and actually, hold on, before you even say that, like, do they have guidelines on there? Like no topless photos or no?
I'm sure they will.
Because I'm thinking
nobody wants to have Hitler riding a pony be the image that they take a picture of in space.
But like, like topless women in space.
I don't know how European they plan on it.
Copyright violation in space. Maybe we could throw like
a few
frames.
They allowed the breastfeeding mama on. You know, they're all
push those boundaries.
We're going to see what exactly they will allow and what they won't. But I'm going to leave it up to the Weird Things audience to determine what we are going to put up there into space on my.
Oh my gosh! You're giving it up. You're letting folks decide.
Wow!
I'll let everybody pitch us your best ideas, and the next time we do the podcast, we'll decide which was the best one.
You realize?
Just go ahead and hit me up on Twitter at Justin R. Young.
It's gonna be some hilarious Justin Robert Young's Photoshop or something, or some kind of amazing Weird Things callback like Spiro and the Fudge. Wish you were here. Or some, oh, dude, there's a lot of possibilities for this. A picture from space, man, that's going to be huge.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think it's really cool. And really what's most interesting to me is the fact that they're doing this for $1 million, or at least the Kickstarter is for $1 million. I'm sure they hope and plan to get more. But what's interesting is the idea of hard-budgeted space projects. You know, like the idea of let's figure out a way to do this in the smartest way possible while working within a budget in the safest way possible and kind of getting away from the idea that we need an unlimited budget to get into space always, you know?
Yeah, well, and especially because it becomes more of a known commodity. And as we get better, I mean, think about the level of just what we were able to do nowadays with computer modeling to find out what's going to work and what's not going to work based on the hard numbers that we know. I mean, you know, when you're in a wiener measuring contest with the Soviets, then yeah, you just throw all the money at the wall and it doesn't matter. Just get something up in the skies. But nowadays, I mean, forgive me for saying so, but he's like, you got grownups in charge. You want to make sure this stuff's profitable and on time. And so you've got that profit motive, which I'm really, really excited about.
Well, I'm all for kids being able to have access to stuff like this, because I think of what, you know, the kids that had access to computers early on.
Yeah, well, that's the story with Bill Gates. The reason Bill Gates became a super wizard is because he happened to go to a school that happened to have a deal where they happened to allow access to a mainframe, time slices, and it was underused at the time. They gave all the free cycles to the school, and so he had this amazing opportunity, and it was on the surface extremely wasteful to throw some 12-year-old kid this ability to play with a supercomputer, but that's why we got Bill Gates.
Exactly. And I think about what you tell me about when you were a kid and how you mess around on the forums and, you know, and it's just like that all leads to something down the line. So
now I do think it'd be very interesting, especially with Penny. I know who's very science minded, even as a young girl. I'll be curious to hear her reaction to this Kickstarter if you show her the video. I do point out that on their Kickstarter page, we get the sense that they will have a sense of humor about these space selfies, because one of the examples they show, a simulated example, is a grumpy cat macro that says "not impressed."
That's awesome. In space,
glittering Earth behind it.
See, that's good. That's the kind of thing that's going to get everybody excited and moving forward. I'll tell you what else. As long as we're talking about announcements and press releases, did you see that thing? The announcement on Tesla about the supercharging stations that Elon Musk did since we last were here.
Going to be able to go from New York to LA. Was that the news?
Yeah, the story is like in 6 months have a bunch of across the nation in within 2 years, 98% of the entire United States covered by these Tesla supercharging stations. And the money quote he drops is once you buy a Tesla, because all of these stations will be for free. Like they will charge your car as fast as possible. They will all be totally free forever. He says, basically, once you buy a Tesla, you are free to travel anywhere in the United States. You can get anywhere for free forever, which is like it's brilliant because it takes the one stopping point with the Tesla, which is, of course, the high price tag, and turns it into framing it the way you think of your all-you-can-eat internet, where it's like you're no longer paying as you go.
Right.
Now, realistically, everyone, of course, is going to charge at home, and, you know, these stations are spread out so that, you know, yes, you can make a hop to get, you know, from L.A. to New York, maybe not in the most direct route possible, but you can physically make it across from everywhere for free, which I think is a great marketing coup for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also solves another massive limitation on the Tesla vehicle. Not only is it an expensive ride, but it's also one that has a range. You know, they've sold it to the idea of like, well, you know, you can have, you know, these are for commuters. It's people who don't drive a ton. And this is kind of striking at that notion and saying, no, wait, you can drive everywhere you want and you'll be able to charge stuff. Now, there still is going to be some anxiety as we go forward with it, because, you know, you're going to worry that there's a malfunction or your battery's not working, and now all of a sudden you're stranded in the middle of Route 66 where, you know, getting help for a regular automobile, however many years we've had of commercial automobile repair. Yeah,
there's no shortage of things that could go wrong. Although, and keep in mind, take the Reddit chatter for what it's worth, but some of the stuff I was reading on Reddit were that Teslas, because they lack so many of the bizarre serpentine gizmos that we have to work out in a mechanical device like a car. And instead, they're so simple. It's just batteries and a motor that perhaps a Tesla would require far less maintenance. I don't know if that's true or not, but if so, that'd be a good.
Well, yeah, I think the issue would not necessarily be how much more or less initially, you know, through the early years, but rather the specialization that you want to make sure that somebody is fixing it the right way, as opposed to fixing it, you know, in the same way that you have, foreign car mechanics that specialize in a different kind of machinery than just the average dude who fixes your Ford.
So I got a question for you. The coupe that is it a coupe or the four door, whatever their new Model S? Is that what it is?
The Roadster?
Yeah, no,
oh,
no,
sedan.
The sedan. Yeah, there we go. What do you think of Consumer Reports giving it a tie for their highest rating ever? I think it was like 99% or whatever.
Well,
do you think that was kind of showing off? Like,
no, I think Consumer Reports is, and obviously they are, they're an organization that has, you know, a controversial history, as anybody who makes their business deciding whether or not things are good or not, you know, is kind of want to have.
Sure.
In reading their report on the Tesla, it seemed very much like they were not only they were applauding a completely outside the box thinking done well, that the idea was, it was kind of like a gymnastics or a figure skating routine that, you know, judge degree of difficulty by execution. And that's how we will define the outer reaches of what we think to be a good review. And Tesla was, for them, returning the balance of power of automobiles to American hands, or, an American manufacturer, which I think was like in the first line of their review.
And it's so, I'll tell you what, man, it's like, it's such an exciting time, because I'm somebody, you know, who, weirdly, like I'm not by default really go electric vehicle, but man, the way Tesla's doing it just has me super excited about it, and the benefits to, even if, like, yes, let's just say we're going to continue to burn coal, and but at least we'll be burning all our coal and gas and oil in giant facilities that will efficiently, you know, capture the toxins or whatever, instead of burning it in all these little cars across the globe. I mean, I don't know. I just, every so often you get a little misty-eyed and you think, man, humans got this. We got it all under control.
You like to think so.
All right. Well, let's spend another segment of the future.
I like that.
Bonnie?
Yes.
Speaking of robots.
Yes.
They continue to encroach in our lives.
Yes.
They are working their spindly metal fingers into our culture at an ever-increasing rate.
They keep calling us on the phone all the time.
They're robo-calling.
Those are robots. Those are robros.
They're stalking me.
Recently, one of the most hot topics are unmanned drones. And specifically what we will allow them to do and where we will allow them to fly.
I know where this is headed.
What are you comfortable with, Brian, with drones?
You know what? Let's ask Bonnie. Well, first of all, the problem with drones, right, is that we here at the U.S. have a bit of a history, maybe using some drones, maybe it's in some foreign lands, maybe to blow up United States citizens without a trial overseas.
So has that been actually documented?
Yeah.
Well, so U.S. citizens.
Let's dial back from there, and let's think about this technology in our daily lives. I mean, surveillance is what people think about initially, but Bonnie, what is, you know, where do you draw the line in seeing drones operate in America?
Well, I think that computers perform the way you program them.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people can make mistakes when they're programming.
Okay, but
and
but
there's here, a lot okay. of there's a lot of room for, you know, whether or not you believe, like, oh, they'll carry out our mission flawlessly. It's like, yeah, but I don't trust you.
You're like, I trust the drone. It's the asshole programming.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like people make mistakes, and people are the ones that are making these things.
So, okay, if you could have. And correct me if I'm wrong, Justin. Right. Are you thinking of some chit chat I heard going around about certain services that could be taken over by drones?
Well, Brian, I'll tell you what. Here, before we get into that, like right now, it's illegal to operate drones in America by commercial entities. Commercial That's entities dumb. Can't.
Now, can you define a drone? Like, what are the varieties?
We'll say a flying robot programmed or piloted remotely that's able to go wherever.
Okay.
Now,
how big or small are they?
Yeah, now, Kiva, what's the difference between a drone and, like, a remote-controlled airplane?
Right. Like, you know, my kid has one of those little helicopters.
Wait, also, like, can't you buy, like, a Parrot AR drone? Oh, but that's just for fun. That's not a commercial enterprise.
Yeah, no, you can't, like, make your business running these things.
Why not? Mm. See, that just seems like an efficient way to get stuff around. Like, if you're on the ground floor, you want to deliver something, and there's a high-rise? Here.
And Brian, you obviously know what I'm talking about, so let's just get into it. Domino's debuted a video where they got two pizzas from one place to another faster than they would have been able to use a car to do it. In one of those hot pocket pizza contraptions that got the pizza from point A to point B as fast as it possibly could. Now, it's illegal to do in America, but where is the sweet glittering lore of pizza to you faster than it would otherwise get there and no tipping? I would assume, unless you're going to just tape $3.
Oh, my God. The drone just stays. It, like, it gives you your pizza, and then it just hovers there.
Awkwardly.
It's just awkwardly hovering it there. It kind of tilts to the side, like,
And the little arm opens up. Just sort of like,
or no, how about like what my pizza guy did the other day? I'm sorry, but I don't have change for a 20. And just stare at me. I'm like, I'm not giving you 10 bucks, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'll tell you what, like, this number one, yes, 100% yes, as long as it gets me my pizzas there faster. And it's not like, what's so great?
Well, no, I don't think that the question is necessarily, are you for drones giving you pizza? Because yes. I think that is almost universally yes, unless you are creepily racist against robots.
But wait, I mean, how do we know that these things aren't going to be like taking out my kid and its eagerness to get pizza?
Well, that's my question is, if the most people would say that they are uneasy with the use of drones in a commercial capacity because we don't think of them in very positive ways. This is a good, big, positive piece of PR for the drone industry and the cause of letting us use them commercially. Is it enough for you to get over the fears of, like, what Bonnie's saying, the safety concerns of whether or not they're going to go down and crash into somebody's house, the idea that once we open up the commercial use of drones, they can now use them. People could use them for far greater things than us just having a blanket ban on them. Now we are looking for people to apply for drone licenses and some government agency being the one to say, yeah, you can do this and yeah, you can't do this. Brian, is pizza worth it?
Yes, dude, of course. Look, anything is worth it. If you were to be like, there's a high five service that will deliver robo high fives, is that good enough to justify drones? Yes. There's a compliment service where a drone will fly out and say, you look great today. Is that good enough? Yes, anything. Anything that keeps actual dumb meat puppet people out of their stupid cars and off the highway is good by me, because it's like, look at the numbers, man. Well, we are idiot meatbags who can't steer our cars correctly, and we forgive all this, but we're scared of robots that are precision engineered to go exactly where they need to be in the most efficient and safe way possible. Look, man, the sooner we could get self-driving cars on the road, the sooner we could get people off the road, the happier I am, full stop, without exception.
Well, and that's what I was thinking. I was like, wait, you know, if there's all sorts of safety controls in these things that they're not going to collide with other moving objects, then, but, you know, that sounds pretty good. But I'm thinking about the high pizza drivers out there, you know, and they're probably a little bit less accurate than these.
Stealing your pepperonis off just one of the twosies while they're driving because they're so hungry and they're high. That's what I'm saying, man.
Right.
And to be honest,
so who's going to run into my kid on the driveway? Is it going to be the high pizza pizza stealing pizza driver, pepperoni stealing pizza driver, or is it the?
And I guess here's the question: What if does it change the equation to say we know for a fact that there will be 27 crashes per year with this fleet of drones? And we anticipate out of those 27 crashes, there'll be about $3 million worth of property damage and two human lives lost every year to it. Mm. Are you okay with that now?
Give me the other statistics.
That's just it, right? I mean, for a lot of people, like, they don't even need to hear the other statistics. All they need to hear is...
Oh, no. I want
to
hear what are other... How many pizza drivers a year are involved in accidents?
All right. I'll look that up.
Also, well, here, hold on. Wait a minute, though. Let's even go beyond that on the drones crashing. And let's look at the fact that now we open it up to commercial viability, and there's now a service that says, hey, have a drone that flies over just your property and therefore just your airspace, but... By the way, your neighbors don't like you, and they don't think that you are really trustworthy.
Have you
and
been
so
talking to our neighbors?
They've hired a service that sends up a drone that just watches you and your children to make sure that you're not going to do anything untoward to their property.
That's kind of stalking, though. That's like,
but we already have that too. Your property. It's just a camera up in the sky watching you. Totally legal.
Mm. We already have that too, because people can install cameras, and some people do install cameras all around their house.
Yeah,
and watch neighbors. So I mean, again, I think there's an analog for that. So it's like, I'm not bothered by that at all.
But this one can actually like angle more specifically to like find where you are in your house and see through your windows, and probably it uses a heat signature so it knows where you are in your house at all times.
I mean, here's the thing. Either I know who it belongs to, in which case I don't really have a beef with the drone. I just have a beef with my neighbor. Or he's doing something specifically to keep me from knowing who's controlling that drone, in which case the drone's about to have a beef with my shotgun, and then it's all fair play. Or maybe I send up a drone to take out his drone.
But it's on his airspace, his property.
Well, yeah, then but you could do it.
You know what? Here, I have a drone that just has a giant like hands doing this, trying to block the other. Like you can't see.
For our audio listeners, Brian's got his hands up like he's like some kind of like
I'm blocking.
He looks like
basketball.
He looks like a 13-year-old geeky basketball player. He doesn't really know. This is his first time.
I don't know how to play.
Yeah. He's like, I'm out on the gym floor. He's like,
he can't get past me because he was at the chess club.
Yeah.
So you're with it. You're saying let's get this drone party rocking and rolling, Brian. You're all in.
Yeah, man. The sooner we can all stay
weirded out.
Are you weirded out at all, Bon?
Well,
like just think not of whether or not they're safe. Let's even assume they're safe. Just think about the worst possible thing that someone could legally do with a drone.
Oh, okay. And, so we're not even worried about
now
safety.
Now that is possible because we can have something as silly as pizza delivered by robots.
I think that comes down. Brian and I were talking about this earlier about like, are there good people and bad people? And
the answer is no, there are not.
No. I mean, you know, because Brian was talking about the how he couldn't believe how many people were not behind having 3D printers.
Can we touch on this? The little peripherally related thing?
Yeah, it relates, sort of.
I mean, totally.
Yeah, it's technology.
Yeah.
And,
there's a poll released. It's a Reason, I want to say Rupay poll. I don't know how it is. But if you go to Reason.com, they did a questionnaire. And one of the questions was, they asked a lot of questions about, you know, people's ability to make bombs at home or have weapons at home. And then they said, by the way, there's a thing called 3D printers. You can print whatever you want out of plastic. Should people be allowed to have this technology in their home? What do you think the breakdown was for and against?
In the context of that other stuff, I would think it would come in highly negative. Like, as if it's like, hey, do you like bombs? Do you like guns? Hey, there's a thing where you can make anything. Like,
okay, the exact question is, some Americans own 3D printers, which can make a variety of plastic objects. Do you think Americans should or should not be allowed to use this technology in their homes? And keep in mind, theoretically, all of the questions are randomized, and there were some that were guided like towards weapons. But given that question,
so I'm going to say it was 60-40 against 3D printers.
Ooh, no, it's reversed. It's 62% said should, people should be allowed to. 29 said full stop, people should not be allowed to use 3D printers in the home, which to me is remarkable. Now, the other question that got news was 3D printers can be used to make guns or gun parts. Do you think Americans should or should not be allowed to print their own guns or gun parts in their own homes? And then that one, well, actually, I'd be interested. What do you think the breakdown was on this? Should and should not?
I will say 70 should not, 30 should.
53% should not. 44% say should.
And this was a Reason poll?
Yeah, it's a Reason...
Which, to be fair, for those of you who are not familiar with the Reason Foundation and Reason Magazine, it is a libertarian organization and a libertarian-leaning blog and magazine and website.
Right.
So this is about the further sample size you are going to get that is, hey, personal freedoms, you should be able to do this, the government should think twice about telling people what to do.
Right. Well... So here's the breakdowns, first of all, on 3D printers, full stop. Who do you think supports being allowed to have 3D printers more, Democrats or Republicans? Not related to related to guns at all. Which one?
Republicans.
Republicans, 64% are pro. Democrats, only 55%. Now, I guess that makes sense, too, because Democrats, you'd have a lot of unions, and there's a lot of widget makers that wouldn't want.
I mean, I would think it's even just more along the lines of, who's more likely to say that the government, you know, should tell you to not have that on something like this, you know, not a social issue, but rather like a item issue. And I mean, I think it would stand to reason politically that it would be probably the more Democratic thinking as opposed to the Republican thinking.
Yeah. Now on the three,
it's all about having things
on the,
but not actions, actions. Republicans are like, stop it. You're not allowed to do that
right. Action,
but have all the things you want.
Right. Have the potential to do things. Okay. Yeah.
And Democrats are like, no, all the actions are fine. You can do every action possible. But the things, we have a real problem with.
The divide is a lot bigger when you mention gun parts. Keep in mind, when it says 3D printing a gun part, they're talking about like the handle. You know, you want a custom handle that looks like, you know, something that you use.
No. I mean, there was the...
The other day there was news about somebody.
Well, there is a fully... The 3D printed gun has all the pieces except for the firing pin. You have to get the firing pin because it's made of metal. But everything else in it is made in plastic. But when they ask the questions, be allowed to print their own guns or gun parts. That's where the enthusiast is people getting, you know, stocks and I want to say armrests because I don't know anything about guns.
But I mean, where 3D printing is in terms of guns now is far less interesting than where it's going.
Sure.
You know?
But again, like the question as far as like what people are making with guns, you know, with 3D printers, it's handles and I want to say stocks. I don't even know if that's right. But the divide is much more sharp. Democrats say 25% said they should be able to. 70% say should not. Republicans say 59% say they should. 39% should not. And independents pretty much split right down the middle. 47% say should. 50% say should not. I thought that was really interesting. And this is only going to get to be a bigger and bigger deal as you get higher fidelity items. And we haven't even talked about the future of 3D printing piracy. When you're able to buy an action figure, scan it, throw up the model for it on the Pirate Bay, and all of a sudden
we've already seen these issues specifically in the gun thing. The guy who put up the full 3D printing gun, the government had it taken down from reputable sites, but the less than reputable sites still have the file up there, which I think was the guy's point of putting out publicly. So we'll see. I was at Maker Faire a couple weeks ago out here in the San Jose area, and which is huge. I mean, the MakerBot is I think the most popular commercially available 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a super interesting field. You know, right now a lot of bracelets and a lot of knockoff army men.
Yeah,
from the 3D printers, but there's a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah, do you know what this is? This is the days of the Apple II Plus. This is the early days when you can assemble it yourself, make it yourself. Not a lot you could do, super low fidelity. But look at where we are 20 years after, you know, the Apple II and 30 years afterwards, and realize not only are we going to see that kind of leap forward with 3D printing, but it's going to be in half the time.
Well, you know, and I was looking at some article, it's probably in Wired. I don't know where I saw this, but they were talking about 3D printed foods.
Wait, just whenever you're done, just say, I was reading the Journal of the American Medical Association. Just say, no. I was reading JAMA about this.
Right. But they talked about 3D printed foods. And like, if you imagine you just, instead of plastics, you're using sugar, then you can create some phenomenal, like, confections.
Well, and if you're using stem cells, you can actually print steaks.
Well, they're already doing that. Yeah.
Well, they're lab, they're culturing steaks. They're lab growing them, but
they're building.
Oh, they are three.
Ears.
We have. Yeah, that's right. We saw that thing on 3D printing, like body parts.
Yes,
out of stem
exactly.
Cells.
And they're growing them skins and stuff on mice and things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so back to our drones, though.
Yes.
So some people have trouble with their 3D printers because of what evil can be done with them, you know?
Right.
Well, are people good or bad? You know, I mean, there's a lot of evil that could be done right now, but things are getting better. You know, I feel like, you know, crime statistics are going down if you take drug.
All right, question. Let me throw this out here.
Yeah.
People, inherently good or bad? Bonnie.
I think they're inherently good.
Justin.
I would say that they are inherently good, specifically when robots deliver them pizza.
Oh, even better, because happiness goes up.
But, okay, now, other question. Like, when people are bad, is it because they are evil? Is evil a thing that are in you, or are they good?
Clarifying question. Is this bad meaning bad, not bad meaning good?
No, yeah, this is bad meaning bad, not bad meaning
bad
good.
Bad meaning I have access to a gun that isn't registered, so I'm going to use it to kill somebody I don't like.
That still kind of sounds like a rap lyric.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that you want to give a specific example here.
Why?
That's
why we got off on the topic of the maker thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, it's just like people have technology and the ability to do things now.
Yes.
That these people are scared of, and they're blocking technology from happening. So,
I mean, is it just the fear that bad people are going to get a hold of it and do bad things? Is that the only reason holding this back, you think?
Well, and then the fear of the unknown too, I think. I mean,
man, I embrace the unknown. I say spin the wheel, break the deal.
Well, I think that's all great, but I don't want my kid to get run over by a drone that, you know.
That's just it.
Grandma got ran over by a drone.
Right.
All right, guys. Well, let's end things on a bit of a lighter note. Ladies and gentlemen, according to a new talk, this is the 18th century, there was a city in America so dominated by sexual promiscuity.
Ooh.
It was known as Sin City. Bonnie, take your guess.
What city is it?
Which city?
This is in the 18th century, you said? Or 1800s?
Post-Revolutionary War.
Okay.
Post-Revolutionary War.
So like 17...
According to this talk, experienced a sexual golden age, replete with casual sex in alleys, brothels, taverns, and anywhere that seemed convenient. A real free-for-all.
And this is in the United States?
In the United States.
I think Atlanta?
Atlanta? No, dude. I know they were like teetotalers in Atlanta early on, but they also didn't allow slaves or Catholics. Like, that was in their constitution. You're like, welcome to Atlanta. No booze, slaves, or Catholics.
Okay.
I'm going to go... Man, I know Benjamin Franklin was in Philadelphia, and that makes me feel like he could single-handedly be responsible for all of that promiscuity.
Ding, 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 Brian, the Philadelphia historic Stenton Mansion was where the talk by the National Society
of
the Indians of America. Sponsored the talk by Clarissa Dillon, PhD.
You nailed it in an alley.
And on a street corner. That's amazing.
Oh,
I can't believe
gosh,
I got that.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious. And the carousing was done by one man.
What is there any talk about like what the culture was that promoted that? Was there a particular fad religion that was like, get boning, it's awesome?
Well, here, this comes from the book Sexual Freedom in Post-Independence Philadelphia, subtitled Martyrdom to Venus. Quote, sailors, servants of both sexes, laborers, apprentices, and journeymen drank, sang, and brawled. Single, married, widowed, deserted, and runaway denizens flirted, groped, and fornicated. The merrymaking often got out of hand. In March 1799, a young man was arrested for being stripped naked in the streets. Highly visible among those carousing pleasure seekers were women working as prostitutes and ready available in tavern and brothels or outside thoroughfares and byways. These quote-unquote ladies of pleasure were quote-unquote so numerous, observed one day in the city, that they flooded the streets at night.
They flooded.
Oh, my gosh. That's
in hookers, Brian.
Oh, my goodness. How man, tantalizing.
So many jokes I want to make about women flooding the streets. All right, you want to make some picks or talk about people who are paying for this?
Well, let's make some picks.
Yeah. Can I confess something? Like yesterday when you and I were doing NSFW and I told you I was reading Grant Morrison's Super Gods.
Yeah.
It's kind of on the fence about it. Like he says it started off kind of like eye rolling, like, you know, Superman's a popular archetype because he represents this. And at first I'm like, oh God, all right, here we go. But then it's like he would make really good points. And then he'd talk about this, that, and take you through the Golden Age of comics, Silver Age of comics. And then he talked about the Watchmen and broke it down. And I'm like, this is a brilliant analysis of what makes the Watchmen great. And then he's just like, but I don't like realistic superheroes. I like my superheroes, you know, fantastic. The way I remember them as a kid. I was like, well, that's a weird way to inject your opinion.
Oh, that's crazy, Grant Morrison. I would have never guessed that you have a predilection for really, really, really insane, barely comprehensible superheroes.
Right. Okay. And so then, like, the whole book, like, when the book was talking about, like, with an analysis of the archetypes of superheroes, I might disagree with him, but I enjoyed hearing it. And he gave multiple perspectives. But then, like, I'm in the last third of this thing, and it's nothing but him turn it into the most interesting man in the world, talking about his visions about, and then I went to Kathmandu and tripped balls, and I watched this building transform into a giant thing, and hand over my heart. I was telling... He turns into Gary Busey, is what happens.
What are
and
you
it's
talking
just,
about?
It's hours of him talking about his drug experiences and about how rich he is. Like, and he says, I'm going to give you some advice, and you can take it or leave it, but just remember, I'm rich. Also, have sex with teenage girls. Teenage, blow that in your back of your head. Also, I shave my head. I'm Grant Morrison, and I'm like, where is this even going? So at this point, like I was out on a bike ride today, and I would get excited when I hit a mile mark because the robot would interrupt Grant Morrison to tell me how many miles I've gone, how much time I'd taken, talking over him, and it was like a brief respite from his self-absorbed analysis. Like at this point, I'm finishing the book for spite.
It's funny that we had mentioned Reason before. I was invited through a friend who's a donor to that organization to a Reason meeting, some meetup. I forget what it was called. But I was talking to somebody, and I remember vividly the conversation was very interesting, and he was a very charismatic kind of speaker. And I was like really enjoying the conversation. And then he seamlessly segued into, and that's why the Fed shot Kennedy.
What?
And then all of a sudden you're like, and we're done.
About every Grant Morrison interview. Yeah. That it's all extraordinarily compelling. He's a brilliant writer. He's a very, very smart guy. And to be honest, like, obviously, the things that you were talking about, some of them are a little hard to wrap your head around, you know. especially as the father of three girls, I don't think somebody crowing about how it's so awesome to have sex with teenage girls is something that you are necessarily going to cotton to. However,
I mean, like that didn't even turn me off. Like, I'm sure it'd be interesting to have a beer with, but it's like he just keeps mentioning how rich he is slash was and who he had sex with and what drugs he took. I'm like, I get it, man. You did a lot of that. All right, well, let's get back to the insights. And it's like, no, you don't get it, Brian. The insights are how rich I am and all the teenage girls I got.
Yeah. No, he's Grant Morrison, man. I feel like that's just what you do. And like, pretty much anything I've read of him comics wise, it's like, it's all amazing until it's a time traveling cockroach. That's the main villain who is speaking a language you can't read.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, so that's my reverse pick. But I talked about it last time. Definitely the Master Switch. I read a couple other ones. Let me just real quick.
No, you only get one, Brian, okay. And it's going to be Super Gods. Too bad.
That's not a pick, though. That's a reverse pick.
You made the pick. Bonnie, what do you got for us?
Damn it.
I am reading about sleep in your baby.
Do you have a story for Kids Are Weird?
I did, but that's what I've been fingering my phone for. No. Is that I'm trying to find my website that had everything listed out so I could do it seamlessly. Should I try it? Can we cut it out if it's too stupid?
No, just go for it.
Okay,
let's do it after.
Yeah, okay, we'll do it after that. But my Dr. Sears book.
Dr. Sears? Sears Roebuck?
Well,
Dr. Spock's book?
Anyways, they have a book on, I can't remember the title because I'm sleep deprived. it's about sleeping your baby.
The book you're telling us is about getting your baby to sleep. But the only reason you're reading is because you want to go to sleep.
Because I want to go to sleep.
There we go.
It's very, very nicely laid out and it gives some clear graphics to help you with your child's sleep patterns.
So that's So anyone who's having the problem you have and wants to be able to put their kid to bed and have it keep to bed, you recommend a book whose title you can't remember. But it's a book about babies going to sleep.
Rest assured, it has something to do with sleep and babies.
Is it Go to F the Sleep, the audiobook read by Samuel L. Jackson?
That one, yeah, that one. Oh, that's all I can think. Is like in the middle of the night, and then like she goes, most of the time she's pretty sleepy and she goes right back to bed, but then sometimes it's like, huh? Oh, I could be up right now, I could be looking around at the world, and I'm like, go the fuck to sleep. Oh! You know, it just comes echoing through my brain, and I'm like, oh, she's just little for so long.
46 minutes, 35 seconds, Justin.
Okay,
that's I don't know why you tell me that.
Wait,
just type it down, I'm not gonna remember it.
Okay. Oh! Did I get the belt? Yeah. Oh my god, I totally forgot. It's Brian. I have a bad influence. We've been working on that word with Brian.
All right.
What about you?
Could say Game of Thrones because I think it's the best television show that I can remember in the last 10 years. Could be Arrested Development, which I believe is the most ambitious comedy script ever written. Mm-hmm. And for whatever my thoughts on it in comparison to the series that aired on Fox, I do love it the further I get away from it and the more that I think about it. But I'm going to say it could even be the unreleased manuscript for a co-host of this show, Andrew Main's sequel to Angel Killer, which I don't want to name the title for in case he wants to change it, but is excellent. It will instead be what I'm starting to read now on my Kindle, which is a unauthorized biography of Roger Ailes, the mastermind of Fox News Channel.
This is not Andrew's book. I was like, how did Andrew get that kind of access?
No, it was not that. Not okay. Andrew's book. The Roger Ailes book, it's, let me see if I can find the actual title of it, but Roger Ailes, who is now known, primarily as being the creator of, the cable news juggernaut, Fox News, is a very interesting guy, and the author does a good job of sort of not just front-loading the book with, like, hey, you know, like he was raised and like, let's tell 14 stories about him as a kid that you don't really care about.
Right.
Bouncing back and forth to contemporary stories where he finds somebody that he grew up with, was like one of his best friends that went on to be a Broadway actor and like is literally very ensconced in the community that would think of Roger Ailes as the devil, and reunites them and watches and does a really good job of looking through that conversation and kind of how much he, I think, secretly sort of, or maybe not so secretly, sort of very much enjoys being the villain, you know, or, you know, being the villain to people that would disagree with him politically. But it's interesting. I'm only about a third of the way through, but it's very well done. And then the reporter seems to have the right head on his shoulders when it comes to covering such a controversial topic.
Well, okay. Since you mentioned what weren't your picks, let me just say also not my picks. Operation Mincemeat, how a dead man in a bizarre plan, something defeated the Nazis. It's a true story from World War II.
That's not on your pick?
No, that's because apparently I picked Super Gods. Also, not my pick is This Machine Kills Secrets, which is about WikiLeaks, which
Wait,
it was really
you really liked that one.
I did. I like both of those, but apparently I've been pigeonholed. My pick was apparently Super Gods, my non-pick.
Oh, okay. Well, I got the title of my pick.
Oh, yeah, you do? What is it?
Yes. Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child by Mark Weiss-Bluth.
Yes. That sounds like Sears.
Wait, what was it?
It's not Sears at all. It was right next to Sears on the...
You bought it at Sears.
What was the title again, Bob?
Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child.
Yes.
There's somewhere out there is some young mom who's listening to Weird Things and just thinks this is the best segment we've ever added. And I want to hear from that person. If you're that,
please,
if you're that
if
one
you are,
chick.
Let me validate me, okay? I need to hear from you. Yeah. Hey, it might be a guy, you know? Some guys tuck their babies in.
Sure.
Right.
Some guys try to.
Okay.
All right. Well, here, let's wrap it up, and then we'll have the brand new segment by Bronnie Brushwood. As long as she's on the show, we will do this segment. Kids are weird. So until next time, Bonnie, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Brian, anything to plug?
Nah. Oh, you know what? Outside of just to say, as I always do, that we record this show on the server PC, given it to us by our friends over at Doghouse Systems. If you go to doghousesystems.com, they make the finest boutique high-end gaming PCs that I've ever seen. This is easily the best rig I've ever dealt with in my entire life. They have a promo code SHWOOD, S-H-W-O-O-D. You get free art and you get some other perks. You get $100 of free loot from me personally. And you get to help pay for this this fine server that makes the... makes these broadcasts possible.
There we go. My name is Justin Robert Young, at Justin R. Young on Twitter. Until next time, it's been weird. All right, Bon, kids are weird. What do we got?
Okay.
Have you found it?
No. Well, I might be able to do this.
Here, you want to take a moment? Because apparently we're going to edit this.
Well, I'm not going to find it. There was a wonderful little list of them, and I'm just having a hard time.
So tell me about it. What is it?
Okay. So, Justin.
Yeah.
She's setting the scene. I like this.
What if you could get a drug?
You want drugs? You like drugs, bro?
Yeah, you do drugs.
I've been known.
It's amazing. It's an amazing drug.
They get rid of headaches.
Totally natural.
They also allow you to dance.
Yeah, it's a natural drug.
Unselfconsciously.
Right. There's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Now, the benefits or that you're more creative.
Yeah.
And you are able to make connections quickly.
Sure.
And you only have to sacrifice your brain size.
What do you mean?
It means when you take this drug, your brain actually shrinks.
Your brain physically gets smaller.
It does.
And what are the trade-offs on this drug again? What are the upsides?
Well, you are more creative.
Uh-huh.
And your neural pathways are changed so that you adapt. Like people who don't take this drug.
Uh-oh. Are squares.
Are limited. Yeah, are limited. Like they are actually, their brain neurology becomes kind of frozen.
Well, so is it but good then, or bad to have a bigger or smaller brain?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, your brain does shrink. You may have some problems with remembering things.
Like well, okay, I mean, I guess that would really be in the list of trade-offs. I guess
yeah.
If what you are asking is for benefits, for hard benefits, am I willing to shrink my brain?
Literally,
I would be more likely to say yes.
Yes. You are?
I am, yeah.
You are. And the other thing that is a benefit is that you are happier.
You're happier with a smaller brain?
Yeah, you're actually a little, you know, is more positive.
Then I'm done. If who cares what size my brain is?
Right.
It ain't the size of the brain. It's the motion of my thoughts ocean.
But you have some forgetfulness problems, though.
More? Wait, okay.
You do.
I think you already told us that.
I forgot. Did I really?
Then here we go. All right, well, how does this connect to
you? Well, I'm sorry to tell you, Justin, but you cannot take this drug. I'm sorry.
What is it?
Okay. This is a drug just for women.
What is?
Okay.
It's for women who have had babies.
Yeah.
And it's not a drug at all. It's the hormones kicking in their dopamine that happens when you look at your child. And in fact, women's brains of adoptive parents, adoptive mothers, also change and shrink somewhat. And
no, this would be oxytocin.
Yeah,
right?
The oxytocin.
Oh, dude, yeah, we had Paul Zak, one of the foremost researchers on oxytocin. I did not know that a side effect of oxytocin was that it shrank your freaking brain, though.
Well, I don't know if it's the drug, but it's but breastfeeding and just
all those
caring
bonding
for
activities.
All those bonding activities
that's
changes
be oxytocin.
Your. Yeah, it is. It is.
Like, yeah, no, Bonnie, you should check out The Moral Molecule. That's Paul Zak's book, all about oxytocin.
Really? Yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah, let me.
Well, now I feel like I'm, you know, I'm trying
I actually
to
just had dinner with him. He was at Andrew's birthday.
Oh,
a couple
amazing!
Weeks ago.
Oh, you know what? I just saw that it's actually on. I don't know how I missed it on Audible, but I'm going to go ahead and add that to my wish list. Right
yeah,
now.
I'm gonna do that one too. All right, well, there we go. Thank you, Bonnie. That was certainly less disgusting than the last Kids Are Weird.
I know, yes. I'm not always going to make them disgusting.
That's
I'd
good.
Like to
I
take
was waiting
from...
for the hook on that. I was waiting
I was
for
in
it.
There.
Yes. Tiny brain. Also, it makes you vomit and puke at the same time until you are dead.
No.
Because that's what happens with kids. You just have not known it, Justin, because you don't have any kids.
Oh. Amazing.
What? You don't vomit and puke all the time.
Just no.
More than
normal vomit
people.
And pukers.
Old pukey
I don't know. If you take in substance related vomiting and puking, I don't know. But anyways.
Well, dude, I like this segment, Bonnie. Keep them coming.
Okay. Absolutely. And I'm sorry. I hope that it flowed nicely.
It was good.
No, that was good.
I felt like
you did a better Andrew impression than I did. I'll say that.
I know. I do try to, you know, I'm going on my runs and then I'm like channeling Andrew. How would Andrew set this up?
Nice.
What? You did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, I'm gonna wrap things up and head out of here. But thank you for making time.
Yeah, you got
yeah,
it, man. Take care.
Great.
Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Buddy. Bye.